some big news from Apple this past week. That was my Kai Rizdahl marketplace impression. This news wasn't about the company being unable to keep up with the demand that it has created with the release of new iPhones. In fact, it had nothing to do with the technology that has made Apple the most valuable company in the world. And it has everything to do with the man who now guides it. You see, Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, made headlines around the world by coming out as a gay man. You might have seen this, his moving statement that was remarkable for me for several reasons. First, because he framed this news by using these words from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Life's most persistent and urgent question is, what are you doing for others? And with that as a centering question, Tim Cook decided to publicly come out so that, in his words, if hearing that the CEO of Apple is gay can help someone struggling with who he or she is, or inspire people to insist on their own equality, then it's worth the trade-off with my own privacy. Now, I have the sense that Cook is a relatively private person. But when faced with this question of what he was doing for others, he decided that this was the step he had to take and to do so publicly. But it was the final words of his text that really caught my attention these past few days. And they read, "When I arrive at my office each morning, I'm greeted by framed photos of Dr. King and Robert F. Kennedy. I don't pretend that writing this puts me in their league. All it does is allow me to look at those pictures and know that I'm doing my part, however small, to help others." He then writes, "We pave the sunlit path towards justice together, brick by brick. This is my brick. We pave the sunlit path towards justice together, brick by brick. This is my brick. This is my brick." Today we find Jesus atop a mountain, surrounded by crowds from all over Galilee and Jerusalem and Judea and beyond the Jordan, and no doubt pressed in by just sheer number, Jesus goes up a mountain, sits down, and begins to teach the best ways to live. Now, in the past month or so, on Sunday mornings, we've been working our way, if you remember, we've been working our way through the book of Exodus. And so if some of what you're hearing from the Gospel of Matthew seems somehow familiar, this is not a mistake. Because of one of the subtle but very present themes in the Gospel of Matthew is the casting of Jesus as a new Moses. Right? Scholars remind us that both are seen as prophets. They have similar birth narratives. They both go up a mountain to reveal the ways to live. Jesus' teaching in this gospel is even divided into five major speeches, much like Moses revealed the five books of the Torah. So, when Jesus sits down atop a mountain to teach the ways to live, these statements resonate to this day. And to be clear, it wasn't that Jesus was ignoring or abolishing or setting aside the law that Moses received from God. In fact, that was far from it. And these Beatitudes and the teachings that follow, Jesus is reimagining them. He is proclaiming them again, what it means to trust in the character of God, that this is really who God is. What it means to live fully into this way of being in God's reign. Now, later in this Sermon on the Mount, it will mean loving our enemies, It will mean giving to everyone who begs. It will mean not worrying about what we eat or drink or wear. But in this section, it means that those who are forgotten, those who are pushed aside, those who are ignored, these are the ones who are designated for God's blessing. The poor in spirit, those who mourn, the meek, the merciful, the pure in heart, the peacemakers, those who hunger and thirst, those who are persecuted for the sake of righteousness. This is the sunlit path, Jesus is saying, and these are the ways you will know when you are walking it. As you may know, last year I began a practice of telling the stories of saints or saints of All Souls past. As together, each year we create our ofrenda, remembering our mothers and fathers, our daughters and sons, our best friends, our grandparents, all those whom we love but see no longer. Alongside them, we have begun to remember those who have nurtured and sustained this, our parish family. We've done so because as we come to this hollow tide, this liminal space, in order for us to know who we are and who we are to be, it is essential for us to remember, to knit ourselves together again. And so this day I would like to tell the story of two saints of All Souls Parish, Deaconess Esther Davis and the Reverend Henri Stein. Both of them just spent a few years here at the quarter of Cedar and Spruce, but both of whom left an indelible impression on the life of this congregation. Reverend Henri Steins was born in Haiti and grew up in the Episcopal Church there before coming to the United States and being formed for the priesthood at the General Theological Seminary in New York City. Henri served Episcopal churches in Charleston, West Virginia, Detroit, Michigan, Washington, D.C., and as the Southern Field Service Organizer for the Episcopal Church's Society for Cultural and Religious and Racial Unity in the mid-1960s in the South. And so it was that in the middle of 1969, Reverend Henri Steins was called to be the seventh rector of All Souls Parish. Now, you don't need me to tell you that the times, they were a-changing. And this was as true in Berkeley, California, as it was in any city around the world. In fact, when Henri was in town for his interview for this position, and was being driven around Berkeley to get a lay of the land, the interview committee member who was driving the car unwittingly turned right into one of the many demonstrations that was convulsing downtown Berkeley, thereby inadvertently tear-gassing all the passengers in the car, including this intrepid interviewee, Father Steins. Undeterred, perhaps because of that, Henri Steins accepted the call to be the rector of All Souls, and what we believe in that event, becoming the first priest of African descent to lead a predominantly Anglo congregation in this diocese. These were not easy times to lead a Christian church in Berkeley. Within months of his arrival, All Souls Parish and Henri Steins were faced with an imminent tenant strike of what is now the Parish House by the Berkeley Tenants Union, which had just formed. The initial salvo by the BTU declared, "All rent is robbery." Times have changed. And it was through Father Steins' negotiation and conversation with the BTU that an agreement was reached that allowed for All Souls as landlord, the language was changed, to receive a reasonable return on their investment. The tear gas was just one of the signs of change in the air. Because from the civil rights movement to the free speech movement to the escalation of the Vietnam War, when you read the minutes of our vestry, they are filled with statements attempting to hold a tenuous middle ground amidst the tides of change. So I'd like for you to listen to this statement that was passed by the vestry April 13, 1971. And remember that, in general, people don't write down things unless it's really a problem. It reads, "The wardens and vestry wish to reaffirm the principle that a priest must act as both pastor and prophet to his people, and that without freedom of the pulpit, he cannot speak that which his conscience dictates. If he speaks only that which all of us find agreeable all the time, he cannot fulfill his role as prophet." The vestry went on, "Freedom of the pulpit implies an equally important freedom to disagree. A healthy parish must be able to tolerate dissent. Our diversity makes it inevitable. What may be uncomfortable for one person to hear may be a very important message to the person sitting in the next pew. We hope that dissent will remain open and honest, and will have the qualities of Christian love and forbearance that are the signs of disagreement among persons who truly care for one another." Now, serving alongside Henri Steins was an equally determined servant of the Lord, Deaconess Esther Davis. A deaconess? Now, this is an office that's now relegated to historical footnotes on Wikipedia because of the ordination of women as deacons and priests. But the role of a deaconess was to serve missions and parishes as teachers, as administrators, as pastors, basically anything and everything that didn't need holy hands, and to do all this with much less pay. Esther Davis served as deaconess at All Souls for almost 5 years, from 1966 to 1971, as the assistant to four different priests in charge of this parish at that time. And her fingerprints are everywhere. Sometime clerk of the vestry, involved with parish life, erstwhile Sunday school superintendent, reaching out to the wider community. And it was here that Deaconess Esther Davis and the Reverend Henri Steins found their way into a particular place in the history of All Souls Parish. Now, what I have here are pages from a scrapbook that was given to Esther Davis when she left All Souls. And interspersed in these pictures, on these pages, are shots of Bishop Kilmer Myers and the bishop when he did his visitations, and a picture of the first girl acolyte, 1971. Yep, thumbs up. And there are some amazing photos of a different haired Suzanne Siebert and Roger Glassie and Dory and Ross Laverty. That was a beard, Ross. I love it. And all among that are these pictures from a day in May of 1971 when Esther Davis and Henri Steins led a group of faithful from All Souls Parish and other parishes to sit in and demonstrate their opposition to the Vietnam War. They first celebrated the Eucharist outside Oakland City Hall, and then they processed to the Oakland Induction Center, the place where those drafted were inducted into the military. What you can see in one of these photos are the two walking crutches that Esther Davis needed to make that walk. And in another photo, you can also see Henri Steins there with his prayer book. And it was there on those steps that Deaconess Esther Davis sat. And right there, she and Henri Steins and others were arrested. Now, what's interesting to me are the reverberations that resulted from that arrest and those reverberations that took place here at All Souls. As is the case now, the political stances of the members of All Souls then were far from monolithic. There were radical left-wingers, and there were staunchly conservative members, and there were lots of folks in between. and at least 12 of that congregation wrote letters of disapproval to the rector, some threatening to leave the parish over these actions. By all accounts, the actions of Esther Davis and Henry Stein revealed a conflicted parish that mirrored the city of which it was a part. Now, as I've been sifting through the statements made by the vestry and reading Henry Stein's sense that he took this action of civil disobedience after reflection and in good faith, I can't help but think of Jesus' statements made up on the mountain and of this week's action by Tim Cook. Each of them, Henry Stein, Esther Davis, and Tim Cook, were looking with heart at the world around them. They were listening closely to the words of blessing by Jesus about the forgotten, about the tread upon, about the voiceless, about the left behind. And each of them, in turn, saw the sunlit path ahead, as well as the sunlit path behind. For every Esther, and Henri, and Tim, there have been countless women, and black folk, and lesbian and gay forebears who gave their lives so that the next step could be taken. Esther and Henri and Tim knew that this road cannot be walked by any of us until all of us can walk it. And so, for Tim Cook, this week he has proclaimed that he considers being gay among the greatest gifts that God has given him. This is his brick. The arrest of Deaconess Esther Davis and the Reverend Henry Stein didn't end the United States' involvement in the Vietnam War any more than Tim Cook's coming out will single-handedly end discrimination and homophobia. But the sunlit path is built brick by brick. Friends, each generation is called upon to reimagine this world. To reimagine this world in the light of righteousness, in the light of mercy, in the light of peace. We aren't asked to solve it all or to do it alone. But we are asked, all of us, each of us, what are we? What are you? What am I? This day of all the saints, I hear the voices of Esther and of Henri among the great multitude that no one can count. They have come before us, paving the way. The sunlit path towards justice lies.